Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of seven discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May of 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
Right from your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Man, all this Old West stuff. It's like trying to work out if I could do that Old West noise.
Yeah, give it a shot.
It's not bad. It's really not for a Queens boy. That's not bad.
But, I'm from the city.
All right, Marcus, what do you got?
Can you do it?
Yeah. Hell yeah. Fuck. Of course I can do it. Yeah. Okay.
That's awesome. That's loud.
I don't know how to feel.
Are you going to get kicked out of your apartment?
Yeah, man. Oh, my fucking landlord is it? No. You know what? He owes me. I had to put up with a fucking burst pipe last night, so he fucking owes me.
This is what I'm talking about. I like bitter markets.
Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everyone. What a fantastic episode we have for you today. We are on to Billy the Kid, part two.
And I want to preface this before Marcus even dives in. This is the story that Marcus was born to tell.
It really is.
This is the story because I didn't fully understand the Lincoln County War and how badass it was until then. And now I'm here. I'm a fucking Old West head now.
I grew up a Westie. Good. No, I grew up with this story. Like I love the Lincoln County War story.
Now my question is that why and every other documentary series and these historical the series that we've been doing all summer, we've been doing history series. Why? Only Old West historians dress like they're from the Old West.
Because it's a style that never goes out of fashion. Hello there. As long as people greet one another, there's going to be Westies out there.
It's just a man who looks like me with an even tinier cowboy hat on and like a little neck scarf going like, you wouldn't believe the type of shenanigans that Billy the Kid could get himself into. And out of.
You wait until I go through my phase.
And don't forget about the mustache. No one in this earth has a fucking better mustache than a Wild West historian.
That's true.
They all want to be Wyatt Earp so fucking bad.
So bad.
That's all they want in this world.
Well, more like Wyatt Blurp.
Yes, indeed. They've got to curl something as they contemplate who to kill in town next. All right, let's get on to part two of Billy the Kid.
So when we last left Billy the Kid, he'd found himself in Lincoln County, New Mexico, as a former member of a horse-thieving gang called the Boys. And he was about to participate in a jailbreak to free one of the leaders of the Boys, Jesse Evans.
It is so fun.
I also didn't understand how big Lincoln County was.
Gigantic.
It's really crazy just how much area they took up. It was like I want to say a quarter of New Mexico.
Wow.
I thought it was just like one little spot.
No, it's the bottom. It's essentially the bottom right corner of New Mexico.
Okay.
Now, in 1877, Lincoln was the largest county in America, territorial or otherwise. Located in southeastern New Mexico and bordering the Texas Panhandle, this gorgeous playground of violence spanned 30,000 square miles. Spread out across that land were relatively new white settlements, established Mexican towns, and the many tribes who made up what was collectively known as the Apache. As such, ethnic tensions were high in Lincoln County when Billy the Kid arrived. But as far as Billy was concerned, he was fluent in Spanish, he defied quote-unquote gringo laws at every turn, and he humiliated law enforcement and military officials by constantly escaping every single time he was arrested.
Certain well-known gringo laws are nothing above mild.
No!
It's illegal to serve anything above mild.
I will never forget one of my most embarrassing white man moments. I walked into the dispensary that I love to go to out here. It's called Roots! And I asked them if they had anything in sativa form that was not jalapeno. Because there was a jalapeno edible that I got. And I literally told him it was too spicy for me. And it's an edible. And he looked at me like I was the whitest thing he's ever seen, which is accurate. And I felt shame. And then I ordered the jalapeno. And then I got home and I ate one. And I was like, it is still too hot. But I was shamed into it.
But you like hot food.
It is just something about the weed. I don't need my candy to be spicy.
Therefore, even before the Lincoln County War to come, Billy the Kid was already becoming a hero to the Hispanic population in New Mexico. In fact, they already had a nickname for Billy, although you might debate as to whether or not it was well-meaning. They called him El Chivato.
Oh, I mean, I'd take it.
What does it mean?
Now, in Caribbean Spanish, El Chivato means snitch. But on the other hand, fanny means vagina in British English, and doodle is a child's way of referring to a penis in Australia. So words don't always have the same meaning across the language board, you know?
And they say we're American-centric on this show.
What a wonderful way to explain that, Marcus. Yeah. Thank you.
Of course. But with the help of my native Spanish-speaking wife, we think that to the Mexican Spanish speakers of New Mexico, El Chivato is probably a combination of the word chavo, which means kid, and the word chivo, which means goat, or more accurately, billy goat. Ergo, a more literal translation of Billy the Kid's nickname of El Chivato would be goat child or Billy Goat the Kid.
That actually makes sense, though, because he was a survivor. He was one of those
ornery.
People, highly adaptable, could move into a lot of different scenarios, made friends and enemies everywhere he went. I also like the other name, which was Belito. That's kind of cute.
Ooh, that's cool, too. Never saw a tin can he didn't want to eat. I love Billy the Goat Kid.
So you'd say he's like the Gabriel Iglesias of Lincoln County.
Sure.
Okay.
The Fluffy.
I was thinking that Russell Peters would do well, given all the different sort of ethnic backgrounds. Russell Peters, like,
you gave it to a British person again.
Well, Russell Peters,
all of the fucking pee things you could give. This is an American story. You gave it to another fucking British person.
Russell Peters is a man of the world, isn't he?
No, no, he's not British. I'm thinking, who's the guy with the big hair?
You're thinking of Russell, the guy with the big hair. Russell with the big hair.
Oh, yes. Brand. All right. Oh, Russell Peters is American. I like him.
Okay, very good. I don't think he is American.
Fuck!
Either way.
Now, concerning the violence in Lincoln County, New Mexico, drunken killings and maimings were fairly routine. And when Billy the Kid arrived there, the largest county in America didn't even have a jail.
Called freedom, bro.
Yeah, but it's also like it's called being held hostage every time you go out to the bar at gunpoint.
Nah, Doc. You got to be funny, man. You got to be able to dance on a board, dude. You got to be love to whistle.
Again, you just saw Back to the Future. That is not a documentary.
I mean, it's really close to anarchy out there in the Old West. I mean, New Mexico at this time, like, it's a territorial government, so there are government officials around. But for the most part, there's a lot of anarchy happening out there. There's a lot of people dying. Some people make it. Some people don't.
Okay.
But in 1877, the first jail was constructed, and one of the first people to be housed within its walls was Jesse Evans of the Boys, who'd been arrested and caged for horse theft.
I learned a couple things about horse theft. Do you know that in Pennsylvania, it is customary, they made it one of the main punishments for horse theft was cropping, which is they'd cut your ears off and nail your ears to a fucking post.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
Horse theft was very serious, at least personal horse theft. Like what Billy the Kid and the boys were doing, like they were stealing from, you know, extremely wealthy landowners. They were stealing from the military.
It was business.
But if you stole just some dude's horse, you'd get fucking killed or maimed.
I just watched I just watched the movie Seven, and if you would have stolen that main enemy's horse, he would have been like, you want to ride the horse?
Yeah, and then you got to, he'd put the horse shoes on you, and then he'd maybe eat all the corn, and then he'd ride you, and he'd be like, which, this is the sin of not taking an Uber, some bullshit.
So, in the wee hours of the morn, on November 17th, 20 members of the boys, including Billy the Kid, entered the county seat of Lincoln County, which was not so imaginatively also called Lincoln.
These people are Lincoln fans.
Damn. Hell, I grew up in Haskell County. County seat there, Haskell. It's just fucking there. They just sometimes don't feel like it.
Also, I was reading about the nature of this prison where it was just a big hole in the ground that they just put logs on top of.
That's this the prison?
This prison was like rough. Like they, it was a dugout prison, so they had dug a big trench, and then they basically stuck iron bars in a trench, and then put tar-covered logs on top of it. So you're just outside the New Mexico sun.
Ooh, yeah, horrible. A lot of buildings around this time were dugouts. My first ancestors in this area also lived in dugouts. Dugouts were pretty popular around then.
All right.
Now, this jail was a somewhat slapped-together structure, as Henry said, most likely because Lincoln County didn't take the law all that seriously, from what I can tell. So after the boys and the kids showed up and stuck their guns in the face of the jailer, they were able to knock down the wooden door of the cell containing Jesse Evans with little more than sacks filled with rocks.
You know what's the main thing that I which also was very distinctive about all of this shit? They had a lot of planning. They did a lot of planning for a lot of this shit. Like, they really were fairly organized. And I don't know if it was because a lot of them had just got done fighting the Civil War and were essentially just, like, trained soldiers or, like, but the boys literally were a bunch of children that kind of, like, they gave each other commands and they knew what to do. Like, one would hold up the jailers, the other would go, like, do the big sack of rocks and bash it against the door. Like, it's fun.
Let's not forget when one of the guys, he went out. He went a little rogue and he just yelled, Leroy Jenkins. And then he ran in there and everyone's like, oh, God very damn it, good. Leroy.
It's really good.
If you recall what happened. That was a fantastic little video there.
It's a good memory.
Very famous thing for about 10 years ago.
Leroy Jenkins.
Yep. It is an internet meme of sorts.
Yes.
Seen the some would say played out.
Well, concerning the boys, like, I mean, they're a street gang, just like any other street gang that's existed throughout human history. And they have just as much experience putting shit together and organizing plans as any other street gang. Yeah. And they have this. They have the same success and fail rate as any other street gang.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, once Jesse Evans was released, the boys resumed stealing livestock, and Billy the Kid did the same, except on his own. He's going solo. About a month after the Evans jailbreak, Billy was caught stealing two horses that belonged to an Englishman named John Tunstall.
You will unhand those horses.
Oh, my God. What are you going to do?
Maybe I'll hire you.
God damn it, I don't want a job.
Hop on my knee.
No.
You young Billy Goat of a job.
No. I don't like to be the boy anymore.
Now, after his arrest, Billy was held in the same jail where the Jesse Evans jailbreak had occurred. And Billy fully expected to get the exact same treatment from the young men that he considered his pals. But as the days piled up, it became obvious that the boys weren't coming.
Why aren't they helping out Billy the Kid?
Because Billy the Kid had people did like him. They did ingratiate themselves to him. But he also was a dude that would also very handily say, like, I'm going to go do my own shit. Peace. Yeah. So he kind of technically broke up with the boys and then kind of did the half expecting thing of like, but come on. Remember last week?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Held out with Jesse.
All right.
So Billy the Kid told the jailer that he would testify against the boys in exchange for his own freedom, which put him at odds with his former gang. And his former gang was also about to be at odds with Billy's new employer. See, Billy never testified against the boys because he didn't need to. John Tunstall, the wronged party in Billy's arrest, not only dropped the charges, but also offered Billy a job on his ranch. Because again, the kid was just that charming.
He somehow talked himself out of jail into a job.
That is like if Richard Ramirez breaks into your house and you're like, you know what? We could actually use a cleaning person. Do you want to stay? Do you want to come by on Tuesdays? That is insane. Well, the man committed a felonious act and they're like, you got what we need here.
Because he did. Because it's like how the FBI hires hackers that break into their systems. It's because from my understanding, I think it's actually very difficult to steal horses. It seems that it's like a, you have to like kind of build yourself up to it. You have to be fast. You have to be decisive. You have to figure out how to do it. Also, like, how do you take a horse against its will with you someplace? I have no fucking clue how you do that besides just like pull on its pecker until you become its wife.
You put a little carrot in your mouth and then the horse eats a little carrot and then you guys kiss.
See, that's worse than touching its penis.
No, it's not. And then the horse says, that kiss was pretty nice. And then he says, you know what? You don't even have to take me. You can have me.
I hate this.
Well, it's funny. It's Henry's is a physical affair and Ben's is an emotional affair.
Yes, I feel like mine is more cut and dry. It's more transactional.
Just want to pull on his pecker.
But he needed these guys. Well, because also the nature of these businesses were like, it's all half legal, half illegal.
Yeah. Now, unbeknownst to Billy, he'd been dropped into the middle of a feud that would, 3 months later, erupt into what was called the Lincoln County War, which I will now do my very best to explain in the simplest way possible.
I'm so excited for this.
This is Marcus Sparks's, like, Hall of Fame moment. This is his Bobby Bonilla lining up to sign that contract to make $1 million a year for 15 years. This is his moment.
All right. Yeah,
no. I mean, the stakes aren't that high. More, it's just like, this is me just trying my best to not get a call from my father telling me all the places where I was wrong.
Let me tell you what. And, you know, he becomes more and more Texan as it goes.
He's an expert at this shit.
When I knew, when I looked off family's history books.
It's where my love of history comes from. My father's a fucking Wild West historian.
I disagree with the preface that this is not high stakes for you, Marcus. That's the highest stakes you've ever said on this podcast. If Papa Parks gets upset, this show is done. So let's make sure.
Because he'll ground him. He'll ground Marcus and he won't be able to leave his room.
I know. The Lincoln County War. Let's get into that.
See, after the Civil War, it wasn't just former Confederate soldiers who settled New Mexico. The opportunities to make money also attracted men with wealth and without conscience. And these men profited off the land and its people with the aid of unscrupulous bankers, corrupt officials, and all manner of armed men.
Now, you add words like unscrupulous and corrupt and armed, but I think that if you just took all of those words away, they just still imply what was in the Wild West. They are just bankers, officials, and men. Right. And they all have guns. They are all unscrupulous and they are all corrupt. If you're in the Wild West, I don't know who was like... Like, was there honest men?
There must have been
a few. Of course there were. There was plenty of honest men throughout the Wild. Most people in the Old West were honest and were trying to just make a way for themselves and just make a living. It's just the fuckers up top, like the men we're about to talk about, that were the most evil.
Because, you know, a lot of people say hope floats, but you know what else floats? Shit.
Yes, it does. Well, if you're on a healthy diet.
Well, guys like this basically controlled everything in New Mexico. And in Lincoln County, there were two men who had a stranglehold on most businesses in the region. And these two men were working in concert with each other. Hard-drinking, aggressive Irishmen both, the bosses of Lincoln County were Lawrence Murphy and James Dolan.
That's Jamie Dolan!
I have to say this one time, that is the owner of MSG, the New York Knicks, then the New York Rangers. James Dolan is the worst owner in sports. I've had to say that. I won't reference it again, and I hate him so much, and I hope he goes away forever. His band is also horrible.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The guy
James
with the
Dolan
band.
James Dolan and the Hot Shots. JD and the Hot Shots. He missed the NBA draft so he could paper a fucking room that still didn't sell out so he could play his horrible rock music. The man is nepotism personified, and he's everything wrong with this country. I'm done with my James Dolan rant. Thank you.
Noted.
Now, it would be somewhat of a stretch to call Murphy and Dolan organized crime figures. See, instead of profiting off crime, they used crime as a business tool, using everything from fraud to intimidation to murder to further their cattle outfit and their store.
They're Americans. They are just people that decided to, like, there's a fun argument. There was one very dry documentary series I watched called The War in Lincoln County.
Yeah, you like them wet. I know how you like your documentaries.
Oh, I do. I prefer to leave it Doc Hard. But these guys talk about these two as that. Because, again, they're not crime figures. These are the men that made America.
Okay. Yeah.
And so they understood immediately, like, oh, you kind of have to live in the gray.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very much live in the gray, and you have to use guns a lot.
Yes, okay. Kill people. Well, I guess that's the gray. I don't know what that is. Mm-hmm.
But when it came to ways that Murphy and Dolan could be compared to organized crime, these guys were also fucking loan sharks. and they would employ gangs of cattle rustlers to increase their stock from time to time. And they would use these same gangs to enforce their will on the people. And one of the main gangs that they would go to was the boys.
The boys.
Boys.
It's just so nice. Back then, businessmen went to the boys and they were a gang, as opposed to businessmen now, who just go to boys.
At least they hired them.
Yes.
Before, you know.
And, very nice.
Instead of just
different
them.
Different times, indeed. Were those, was the term roughnecks? Is that who you're, was, is that a cattle wrangler? Is that where that term comes from?
No, that's Teddy Roosevelt.
Rough, you're thinking, actually, Henry, you're thinking of Rough Rider, and Ben, roughneck is more of an oil worker term.
All of this shit. Fuck.
He's the master.
It's true. I mean, I forget. I forget. I'm here. I'm a student of life. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry for everything.
Now, to the people of Lincoln County, Murphy and Dolan's outfit was known simply as the House, because all of their business was done from one gigantic structure smack dab in the middle of Lincoln. But the House's malfeasance wasn't limited to local government. They were also associated with a statewide organization of corrupt government officials known as the Santa Fe Ring.
This is what we will call later on in various series that we'll do throughout the years that we hope to do, B-Team Illuminatis.
Hmm. Yes.
Where it's like they made a group effort to say, we're going to control the state.
Mm-hmm.
And then as this shit gets legitimized, like once this becomes solidified as a state, it goes from a territory to being a part of the United States, we'll then be the ones in charge.
Mm. The Santa Fe Ring included the territorial governor of New Mexico, the district attorney of Lincoln County, a smattering of judges territory-wide, and at the bottom, the sheriff of Lincoln County, William Brady.
Damn, so they had this thing pretty well locked up from a power perspective.
Oh, yeah, they thought they did.
Yeah, and since Sheriff Brady was James Dolan's man on the ground, Brady had already had a run-in with Billy the Kid, and he had, in fact, confiscated a Winchester rifle from Billy before the Kid had even heard of James Dolan, Lawrence Murphy, John Tunstall, any of this shit. Now, the House got a piece of everything that everyone did in Lincoln County when it came to business. And if you were friendly to the House, Murphy and Dolan's generosity knew no bounds.
Mm.
But if you made yourself their enemy, they had no problem with sending a posse of potentially murderous men to change your mind.
But there was a bunch of, which is honestly scarier than men, which is 17-year-olds.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think we referenced the movie Them. Did we reference that
often
in the last episode?
I mean, all the time.
Being horrified by teenagers is that is why the
teenagers have no scruples.
They have no soul.
No, they have nothing to live for.
Sometimes they come back. Do you remember that? Teenagers coming
zombie
back to
teenagers.
Kill everyone.
Yeah. That was really scary. I just remember the high school that I used to live across the street from in New York. And I was always so scared because sometimes they make fun of my clothes as I walk down the street. And I knew that I have to go, yes, and laugh along with it. Because if not, I didn't know when they'd all decide to turn on me because they're all full of hormones.
When I was in Minneapolis, I hung out with my 3-year-old goddaughter. She called me a poopy butt. And dare I say, it kind of hurt.
Honestly, yeah. She's correct.
I know.
You are a poopy butt.
Oh, buddy. All right.
Well, it was into this power structure that we see the entrance of John Tunstall, a 24-year-old, well-heeled Londoner who had just arrived in New Mexico, fresh off of amicably splitting from a successful merchant family so he could make his own way in life. He's a rich boy, but still a rich boy on his own.
Okay. Well, he definitely was of a mind that he's like, well, I'm well-bred. And I wear correct clothes. And simply, we can deal with all of this legally. Can't we, Japs? Like, he is very proper.
Yes.
Like, he is this idea that, like, he's like, I am just here as a business venture, as you are, you tiny young Irishman.
My father runs a mercantile in British Columbia. Perhaps we can come to an agreement here,
sir. Well, that's not to be a way. Yeah. We can come to some form of agreement.
I just realized if I was alive back then, I would have shot him. I can't deal with that.
Remember, John Tunstall, he's only 24 years old. He's like, you know, maybe 6 years older than Billy the Kid. John Tunstall is always portrayed, and for some reason, every single Billy the Kid movie, he's always portrayed as this, you know, gentlemanly old man, like an old British man.
In Young Guns, where he's just him just being like, Billy, I sometimes look at you as my son. And like, meanwhile,
that
it's
is
not
the American fetishization of the British male.
Yes, it is just another boy.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Tunstall's goal was to start a cattle outfit of his own and to open a mercantile store in Lincoln County. So, with the help of an attorney named Alexander McSween and a cattleman named Chisholm, John Tunstall went into direct competition with the House. And the House, remember, that's Lawrence Murphy and James Dolan. Now, at this point, the House was on shaky financial ground, and half of the House, Lawrence Murphy, was dying of cancer. But even in a weakened state, the House was still a dangerous animal, perhaps even more so. So,
do you think dying of cancer in the Old West, like what that must have been like? That must have been fucking horrible.
Oh, it's probably similar to now.
Just leaking, just like shivering and stuff where they just keep pouring bourbon on you.
Yeah, and the fucking tumors start forming themselves underneath the skin and they start getting bigger and bigger. And you start
look, Darren,
them.
Look. Kind of looks like a dog.
Oh,
he's got
nice.
The ears and he's got the long snout. We should go back here. Yeah,
you got puppy cancer, my friend. That's the cutest kind of cancer you can possibly have.
So John Tunstall, he knew that he had to protect himself from potentially violent business rivals. The reputation of the House was well known. So John Tunstall specifically hired ranch hands that were as good with the gun as they were with a rope. Mm. And that's not all that uncommon for the time and place.
Oh, yeah.
But since Tunstall hired young men who were willing to kill or be killed as a part of their everyday duties, his employees were a little rough around the edges, which meant that Billy the Kid fit in perfectly with John Tunstall's outfit.
And honestly, it's an incredible tapestry. Emilio Estevez, Matt Dillon, you've got the other guy,
I remember
Charlie
Matt
Sheen.
It's not Matt Dillon, it's Dermot Mulroney.
I thought Matt Dillon's not in that too?
Matt Dillon's not in it. No, it's Charlie Sheen, Emilio Estevez, Lou Diamond Phillips.
Lou Diamond Dermot Phillips.
Yeah. Plays Chavez y Chavez, yeah.
All right, and that's another reference to Young Guns.
I mean, this is what I have.
From the early 90s.
Yeah. I mean, if it helps, I can attach certain people when we talk about them. I can attach a fucking late 80s heartthrob to that person if it helps our listeners.
Thank you.
Live from your grave.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it, but guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, you can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. And with Squarespace AI, you can explain what your site is about, choose your tone, enter what you need, and get auto-generated text. And that helps you save time. I know I'm sitting on about 2 literal wheelbarrows filled with horse pics. Now, part of the issue has been is a lot of these pictures are getting stopped at customs because some of them do depict various world leaders in horse-like circumstances that seems to be pinging a lot of these custom agents' accounts. Now, so what I've done to do is like, so while I'm trying to work on hand smuggling these horse pics over various country borders, I then also have time because Squarespace is doing all the other ad work for me to go and work on my killdozer at home. So thank you, Squarespace, for allowing me to diversify in the best way possible for this country. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. Go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. That's one of my favorite things about it. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Now, personally, I'm in the middle of re-landscaping my yard. I like to do it myself because I called up a landscaper to see how much it cost, and it was absolutely insane. Plus, I love dirt. I love getting my hands in the dirt, and I love planting things myself. And Fast Growing Trees has given me some wonderful plants that I can use. Like, I got this Texas sage. It's purple. I've dug up a whole bunch of horrible bushes and shrubs up in front of my window and in front of my house and put some purple Texas sage up there, and it's going to thrive, and it's going to look real good. And I didn't even have to go to a nursery to buy it. It came to my house. Now, this spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code LEFT at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code LEFT at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code LEFT. Offers valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
Now, the thing about Billy the Kid is that when John Tunstall dropped the horse theft charges and offered him a job on his ranch, Billy took the chance to go straight because he, like almost everyone in Lincoln County, liked and trusted John Tunstall immediately.
Hmm.
Well, see, Tunstall was the first person to give Billy and the rest of these juvenile delinquents a future, although the Tunstall Ranch wasn't quite as lost boyish as one might think from watching some of its cinematic interpretations.
Whatever. It is, but no, it was difficult work. It was like you had to do all the horse rustling.
And it was horrible.
Well, also, that's what I mean. What I mean is that it's not all juvenile delinquents. It's not like these young men are all running from something here. We need to get everyone needs to come together and read and write. Like, it's not that like quite like that.
Yes, because Terrence Stamp has that. It's that whole scene in Young Guns where he's been like, now we do our reading lessons. All right, boys. He's like, no, he's teaching them all to read. And be like, that did not happen.
Definitely did not happen. Lost Boys. That's Peter Pan. Reminds me of the movie Hook. They were all fantasizing, and then they had food appear on the table, and not one of them fantasized about someone carving up a ham or a roast beef. The food they fantasized about sucked.
It was
for
kids.
Where's the tacos? Where's the pizza?
It's kids. Children. They don't know.
It was pudding. It was mostly pudding.
But they could have fantasized any food.
And they didn't put any naked woman in there? Or one naked man they could all suck on if they wanted to. You know what I mean?
You've perverted it.
I'm just saying, if you're going to put a lot of things in this scenario, you cast it.
I was attempting to make more of a reference to pizzas or tacos, and you brought up young boys sucking on
old men. Pudding. I was on your side, Vin. I stuck with pudding. Although it is a very sexual food.
It's not. All right, can we go on? This is disgusting. The little insight we get into your love life, Marcus,
this is the Dayquil talking.
It's so gross.
Either way, Tunstall's employees learned how to be proper cowboys together. They formed a strong bond, both between each other and with John Tunstall. And John Tunstall, piece by piece, managed to acquire 4,000 acres of land on the Rio Feliz for his cattle outfit. 4,000 acres, and, you know, that's not that's not a small plot. Think of this, 1 acre is about 1.3 football fields. So it's pretty big
fucking
spread.
Yeah.
Well, he came for money. So this was like his father gave him money, it seems, to like, that was like the seed money he had to come. And basically, because the famous sentence he says that every Wild West historian says, being like, I plan to make 50 cents on every dollar made in Lincoln County, father.
Yeah. Well, of course, John Tunstall getting a foothold here in Lincoln County. This was unacceptable to James Dolan and Lawrence Murphy. AKA the house.
Because James Dolan was 5'2" of pure rage. He was 5'2" as well.
Scary.
Yeah, scary.
I don't mess with the little ones, dude.
No, because he would pop off.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, besides just the threat Tunstall's outfit was to the house's business, there were also old world grudges playing out right here in America. See, Murphy and Dolan were perhaps not surprisingly Irish Catholics who'd made their fortunes in America through grit, determination, and violence. And John Tunstall was a newly arrived Englishman who'd been born wealthy. Now, Tunstall saw this whole thing as regular business competition.
It's healthy. It's healthy to the market. Everybody should always diversity.
Yeah, fair is fair. Mm-hmm. But to Murphy and Dolan, this was just another example of the Englishman coming to take the Irishman's land and grind them under his boot heel like he'd been doing for centuries.
And I won't stand for it. I won't stand for it, man.
Yeah. That's typical. That is a typical Irish English feud. Yeah. I like it.
Mm-hmm. See, like Billy the Kid's mother, Murphy and Dolan had grown up in rural Ireland during the Great Famine. Mm. And we can't get into the history of the fucking potato famine.
All right.
But all you need to know...
Can I tell you the only thing I know about it?
What?
The only thing they had to eat was potatoes.
That's not actually true. It was a potato. Right.
Holy fucking shit. Now we get how many emails? Well, I'm going to leave it in. I'm going to leave it in to say we need to leave it in, but just the emails we're going to...
There was a blight on potatoes. That's the whole thing about it being, they actually had nothing to eat but potatoes. That was people that were trying to muddy up history.
See?
It's one of those things where it's like, it worked because they did. It was a potato blight that came
in. That's why I brought it up.
All you need to know is that the potato famine was made much worse than it had to be by British policies. Mm. Therefore, Murphy and Dolan were what you might call a little oversensitive to an Englishman gaining a foothold in their backyard. And their actions leading up to the Lincoln County War would reflect that animosity. Now, the opening salvo of the Lincoln County War is by far the most complicated because Murphy and Dolan tried to bury John Tunstall and his associates with shady legal maneuvering before they resorted to murder.
And for that, I give him credit.
They didn't go right to the gun, I guess.
It is still all highly illegal, it's all highly shady, and it's all highly corrupt. But yeah, to their credit, they didn't just go and shoot him in the fucking head.
No, okay. They used
jurisprudence.
Jurisprudence.
Basically, James Dolan wanted his hands on an insurance policy payout that had been set up by local attorney Alexander McSween. And remember, McSween was a close friend of John Tunstall's. He was one of two guys who'd helped John Tunstall get started in New Mexico. And remember that name, Alexander McSween. He's going to be a very important figure in all this.
Yes, and Alexander McSween he's a lawyer. He's a normal guy, pacifist. He didn't have a gun or anything. He didn't like to fight. That wasn't his shit. But he had a personal beef against James Dolan. Speaking of beef, even though it's kind of funny because they're in the beef business. But he had worked for James Dolan for a period of time, and he knew the whole inner workings of the house. So he was helping Tunstall with inside information to help him outmaneuver the house.
All right.
So to get a hold of this insurance money, James Dolan got a corrupt judge to issue a sham warrant for Alexander McSween's arrest on charges of embezzlement, which was Dolan's first step towards, quote-unquote, legally seizing everything McSween owned. And since the Lincoln County Sheriff, William Brady, was a pawn of the house, McSween was arrested and jailed in Las Vegas, New Mexico. Now, John Tunstall and Alexander McSween were not business partners, but they were certainly friends. So when McSween was arrested, Tunstall came to his defense publicly.
I shall write a strongly worded letter.
Wow.
Yeah, Tunstall wrote an open letter in the local paper accusing James Dolan and Sheriff Brady of embezzlement themselves.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And he just he just bought a newspaper. He put a reflective thing in it, and it was just a mirror. And he's just like,
the criminal doth see himself in the advertisement, doesn't he?
Yeah, I remember that.
And isn't the embarrassment alone punishment?
It kind of is, man. I remember when Time made you the person of the year with the mirror.
It was me.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't feel like it.
No, definitely not.
Well, people didn't come out in public against the house. They were just too fucking powerful. And Tunstall taking out this newspaper article, one, it was an affront to their power. And two, he was placing himself right in the middle of the fight. And it opened himself to attack from Dolan's outfit. Now, Dolan and his dirty little judge were under the false assumption that Tunstall and McSween were business partners. So the judge took the whole thing a step further by issuing a writ of attachment that included both McSween and Tunstall. And essentially, this writ demanded that all of McSween's and Tunstall's property, including McSween's law office and Tunstall's cattle and store, be turned over to the county, where it would no doubt magically somehow end up in the hands of James Dolan.
Wow.
But so, Dolan formed a posse to enforce this bogus writ, and he recruited corrupt law enforcement officials, including Sheriff Brady, as well as local gang members like Billy the Kid's former pal, Jesse Evans.
That's gotta be fun. Like, yeah, the day that you get to be, you're in an informal gang, and then you get to be turned into an official police officer.
Yeah, it's
for
a good
the day.
Day.
Like, because we're gonna see this come up with the main crew that we're going to be talking about. But that's got to be like, because then you're just like, man, I can legally shoot people.
Well, then you say, I'm bona fide.
I'm bona fide.
I'm bona fide.
Now, in the days leading up to the first shot of the Lincoln County War, the Dolan faction and the Tunstall faction had a few small skirmishes, including one where Billy stood outside of the seized Tunstall store and called every man inside a cowardly son of a bitch.
You Whoa. All suck. Whoa. You suck, and you're dumb, and your boss is short, and you smell. How about that?
It's a good time to be in the corner of the bar sipping your whiskey, but like, it's going to be an interesting day today.
Yeah, this is a good time for town gossips, too.
Definitely. Yeah.
But the true start of the Lincoln County War was February 18th, 1878, when Tunstall and some of his crew, including Billy the Kid, took 9 horses to Lincoln to sell them before the bogus posse snatched them up. And as it turned out, they were right to try and sell. That same day, Dolan's posse, about 40 strong, arrived at the Tunstall ranch for those 9 horses. And when they found Tunstall and the horses already gone, about 14 men peeled off to run him down. Later that day, Tunstall, Billy, and the rest of the crew were making their way down a narrow canyon when Tunstall's boys spotted a flock of wild turkeys.
Oh.
Unable to resist chasing them, which is it's a lot of fun to chase wild turkeys.
Are
they run
Marmaduke? Would he be unable to resist chasing the turkey?
He
like,
is still
oh,
he is Billy the Kid. You know what I mean? Like, no, he still wants to chase a turkey if he gets a chance to.
And it's all of them. It's the dog from Up. What is happening?
It's a lot of fun to chase wild turkeys because they look funny when they're running away, and they run, but they can run pretty fast, and it's really fun to chase them around.
I just love that you frame it like Charlie Sheen in a heroin den trying not to get high.
It's so like, funny.
Oh, I gotta see the turkey. Oh, I gotta see him wobble.
But, you know, because of the wild turkeys, Billy and the rest, they took off, and they left Tunstall all alone.
It's like when I'm in the car as we were driving through Nebraska, I'm like, horses. Look, his horses.
It is exciting.
And in a cruel twist of fate, Dolan's posse caught up to Tunstall just as Tunstall's only means of protection rode off to play grab ass with a bunch of wild turkeys.
Oh no.
And so, after a short argument about the 9 horses, the foreman of Dolan's ranch, Buck Morton, pulled his rifle. He then shot John Tunstall squarely in the chest, causing him to fall out of the saddle. Another member of the posse then got off his horse and shot John Tunstall in the head just to make goddamn sure he wasn't alive.
But you know what? In the Old West, that's how you've officially become an American citizen.
Double tap.
So didn't he die an American man?
When you shoot a British man in the head or when you...
If you get shot in America... You are officially a United States citizen.
Knowing that they were outgunned, Billy and the rest rode off to fight another day, while Dolan's men killed Tunstall's horse and carefully arranged the corpses of the animal and the man to appear as if they were taking a nap together because they thought it was funny.
Now, I feel like in a way, if this was a fair fight, there was a way they maybe could have avoided the following war. Right, the way that they could have fought. But they made it personal.
Yeah, it seems very personal.
It got very, very personal. And when it comes down to it, Billy the Kid, in a way, and these guys, they had affection for Tunstall. Like, they liked Tunstall. And then they desecrated his corpse. Which at the time, still, I remember, like, times were ancient until 1975.
They could have gone with a Tunstall Duncan. A Tunstall Duncan? And carved up the horse's stomach and then placed him inside of there.
Yeah, if this was Saw. If this was Saw, Back to the Future 3, like, mix up.
Yeah.
And it was with the murder of John Tunstall that the Lincoln County War began.
Woo!
Or sad.
Now, Billy the Kid had only known John Tunstall for about 3 months, but Tunstall was also the first person who'd ever placed any faith in Billy. So, at Tunstall's wake, as Billy looked down at the body, he swore that he was going to get at least some of Tunstall's killers before he himself died. Mm. And it was a promise that Billy the Kid was very quickly going to keep.
You really see in this story, because the first episode was definitely Billy the Kid as a scamp. And he is this kind of like lovable rogue that's kind of, he starts like his origin story of being a super slippery little baby criminal.
Yeah.
But this is when he becomes a fucking desperado. Oh, and like Billy the Kid, like, it's kind of surprising to me how dangerous he would become and how good of a fighter he would become.
He has a little righteous indignation at this point. So he feels validated, right?
He feels extremely righteous in what he's about to do.
Okay.
Because he places loyalty above all. And the man who, the first man who ever reciprocated that loyalty, John Tunstall, had been killed unjustly.
Right.
So therefore, all of the rage and the violence that is within Billy the Kid, he now has permission to let it loose.
And nothing's like a child who has like that, because kids have that sociopathic like version of idealism where it's like in his mind, because now it's like, now I'm, this war's going, now we're doing this shit, and because he feels validated now he feels permission to do all sorts of fucked up shit.
And I do
a reason why we send 18 year olds out to war.
Yeah,
and Billy the Kid's 17.
I have to push back a little bit, Marcus. I don't think he held loyalty above all. I think just above loyalty was chasing them turkeys.
It seems like it, because he left his post for a second.
I don't know, man. You just got to play grab ass sometimes. I know it's I got true. Yelled at it all the fucking time when I was a kid. Yeah. Quit playing grab ass, goddammit. Stop being so goddamn cute. Stop playing fucking grab ass. And I know but that's the thing. You're supposed to fucking play grab ass sometimes in life. Sometimes you got
to
do it.
Yeah, 16-year-old doesn't need to be like a stern father-like figure on a horse. You know what I mean? You can still play the child thing. Billy the Child.
I mean, I guess it was before Pokemon Go. They really did have to find turkeys, and turkeys are kind of mythical creatures.
This was really before Pokemon Go.
Yes, it was. All right.
Now, the posse that had killed John Tunstall had done so on orders that had come from Sheriff Brady. But Sheriff Brady himself was not present on the day that John Tunstall was murdered, nor was James Dolan present. These were men, like, these men gave orders and had the lower downs do their dirty work.
Oh, yeah.
But since the sheriff was the one who gave the direct order to kill an innocent man, and since most officials in Lincoln County were in Dolan's pocket, trying to get justice for Tunstall's murder through regular means was out of the question. But luckily for the Tunstall crew, there was still one government official in the town of Lincoln who wasn't allied with James Dolan. That was the Justice of the Peace. And he quickly formed a panel that delivered a verdict of homicide for the posse who killed John Tunstall.
Whoa.
But the warrants themselves were useless if there was no one to serve them. And Sheriff Brady sure as hell wasn't going to do it himself. So the Justice of the Peace turned to Dick Brewer, the foreman for John Tunstall's ranch. The JP deputized Brewer, and Brewer in turn deputized 15 other men who were also former employees of John Tunstall, including Billy the Kid. These former cowboys then dubbed themselves the Regulators.
Regulators!
Mauna, that is amazing. It's like a pyramid scheme of power.
Honestly, it's kind of weird. It's also a formation vaguely of the form of like an Old West version of the Avengers. These guys are ready to go.
That's what it is. They took their name, the Regulator. They didn't come up with Regulators themselves. They took the name Regulators from like the popular dime novels of the day. It would be like if a modern gang today like named themselves the X-Men.
Cool.
That would be cool.
And they were all like, one was psychic but sensitive, and one man could make ice. And the other man couldn't open his eyes. Yeah, it's too dangerous.
That would be fun.
No matter where the name came from, the Regulators, wearing badges, one and all, they set about the task of finding justice for their former boss.
And honestly, their tale is also told completely inaccurately in Billy Joel's Ballad of Billy the Kid. And but I will say, according to some of these YouTube comments, Billy Joel's piano is a certified illegal weapon of mass destruction, the destruction of war and violence. Billy Joel has brought so much happiness into my life, and without them, I would still be in the dark, horrible place I was in. Billy, you are a god in every way.
Wow, Billy Joel saving lives.
Now, the regulators were led in the field by Tunstall Ranch foreman Dick Brewer. And if it makes you, if it keeps it straight in your head, Dick Brewer was played by Charlie Sheen in Young Guns.
He's very the older serious. One, the wizened one, who's now, he's a little bit age beyond his years. He's 23, so he's been a regulator he was a ranch hand for a period of time.
Yes,
he's one that's a belay,
He comes from a long line of Dick Brewers, which is a horrible way to make beer.
Yeah.
Very salty.
Yeah, very salty. Alexander McSween, and if you want to use that, you know, if you want to keep that straight in your head, that's Terry O'Quinn, you know, John Locke from Lost.
Yes.
He plays Alexander McSween in the movie. Mm-hmm. Alexander McSween, whose false embezzlement charge started this whole affair, he was still in the mix as well. It's pretty much Dick Brewer and Alexander McSween giving all the orders here.
McSween became sort of the de facto boss when Tunstall was murdered.
Yeah. See, McSween had fled town soon after Tunstall's death, fearing the same fate might befall him. But he always stayed close enough to Lincoln to give his input as to how this war might be brought to an end. And McSween would indeed see the last day of the Lincoln County War.
Live from your grave.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It says here I have to talk about something I need to get off my chest, and I guess I can share it here. I eat mayonnaise for fun. It's a hobby of mine, and it's an addiction. And it's a daily weight on my life. How much I need whipped egg whites and oil crammed into my veins as soon as I wake up. And a lot of people carry around a lot of different stressors, big and small. Some people are presidents. Some people are soldiers. Some people have to eat mayonnaise, especially with hard-boiled eggs, which is what I eat for lunch. But I guess I should share that in therapy, because therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And what I do is I just add eggs if I have mayonnaise left over. I just continue to add the eggs. But if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I hope they can help me. My God. I hope they can help me. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lastpod.
Ah, Jules. Oh, Jules. Make a wife smile today. The road to getting engaged can be long and full of memories and pitfalls and landmines. Or it could be short and thrilling, like a roller coaster on the way to the police department. But the road to finding the perfect engagement ring is a straightforward path every time. All you've got to do is head over to BlueNile.com, and they're going to ship them rocks straight to your wife's new fingers. On BlueNile.com, you can create a bigger, more brilliant piece than you can imagine. At a price you won't find at a traditional jeweler, Blue Nile is the original online jeweler since 1999. That's present time to me. Their diamond price guarantee means that in most cases, they can meet or beat a competitor's price on a comparable diamond. I know when I got my wife a beautiful Blue Nile necklace, the first thing she did was, "What did you do?" But afterwards, she was so happy to have it, and she loved it, and she wore it when we went on vacation, and Maron, did everybody come around being like, "Where'd you get that piece, you beautiful woman?" And I was like, "Stop talking to my wife. She's spoken for. You can see it with the Blue Nile bling she's got on her." Right now, get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more with code LASTPODCAST at BlueNile.com. That's $50 off with code LASTPODCAST at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors. It's a waste. Don't waste hours on apps.
besides appetizers. That's the kind of apps I like. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Did you know that empanada is already Spanish? I didn't. Thanks, Babbel. Did you know that burrito is already Spanish? Wow! I just got to learn all the rest. And eventually, I'm going to be eating downtown Mexico. Thanks, Babbel. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/left. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/left, spelled BABBEL.com/LEFT. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Now, the regulators soon picked up more men for their cowboy army because everyone hated James Dolan and everyone liked John Tunstall. So by July of 1887, the regulators had 60 men at their command.
Damn.
But the only person out of those 60 who was involved in every major battle, skirmish, or gunfight from beginning to end was Billy the Kid.
Cause I'm wanted, wanted, dead or alive.
Once again, I would prefer alive, if possible. Thank you.
Now, what made the Lincoln County War particularly violent was that both sides believed themselves to be the law. And technically, both sides actually were the law.
It is very confusing. Because yeah. Anybody can be the law if you have a badge in this time period.
It yeah. seems like
lanyards have always been very important.
I know the power of a lanyard.
On one side, you had Sheriff Brady, who was an elected official who deputized men himself. He was backed by James Dolan. On the other side, you had the regulators and you had Billy the Kid. They were also legally deputized, but they were deputized by Justice of the Peace, who had just as much power as the fucking sheriff. And really, all this tells you is just how vague of a concept the law really was in the Old West, especially in a place like New Mexico. Because New Mexico, at this point, it's still a territory under United States jurisdiction, but not yet a state.
Hmm. It's like being a fiancé. Don't count unless you're married. You know what comes down to it? Wow. You got to get through that period. It's called the Chapel Perilous.
Mm-hmm. New Mexico, not a girl, not yet a woman.
Oh. That's great.
Right in the middle.
Right there.
Well, as a result of this vagueness, the law itself completely broke down in Lincoln County during the war. And the only thing anyone with a badge concerned themselves with was killing other people who were also wearing badges.
Oh.
Now, ostensibly, the regulators existed solely to arrest and incarcerate the men who had directly participated in the murder of John Tunstall. So they started with the man who had fired the first shot into John Tunstall's chest. That man was Buck Morton. On March 6th, 11 regulators encountered 5 riders that included Buck Morton and members of the boys. And after the regulators chased Morton and his cohorts for miles, firing over 100 rounds of ammunition without hitting anything, Morton's horse gave out. Exhausted, the horse tripped and took down the horse of a boys' gang member as well.
Oh, no.
After Morton and his cohort surrendered, Billy the Kid immediately wanted to kill them both because he knew the corrupt Sheriff Brady would just set them free.
It was a scene out of a movie where he like pulled the gun. They were there. They got him. They were about to like attach him to the horses, however they were going to transport him. And he pulls out his gun and they all grab him. And they're like, no, Billy, no, no, no. And he's been like, he killed my English father. Uh-oh. He killed my English father. And they're like, no, Billy, no. We're regulators now, bro. We got to do this on the legal side, bro. And it's like,
no, it's Dick Brewer. Like, Dick Brewer says, Billy, we're the law now. You know, and he took his deputation very seriously. He insisted we're the law and we should act as such. Therefore, Dick Brewer said, our only job is to take Morton and this other guy back to Lincoln. And then the system's going to take over from there. And then our job is done.
But what was his time? My day will come.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, scary stuff.
Now, Billy acquiesced in the argument eventually. But while the regulators were on their way to Lincoln with these two prisoners in tow, the posse was joined by a man named Bill McCloskey. And Bill McCloskey, he had worked for John Tunstall briefly, but he was also friends with Buck Morton, the man who had shot John Tunstall. There's a lot of people stuck in the middle in the Lincoln County War.
Because there's a lot of grays in New Mexico. There's a lot of people working on various sides because everyone, like you said in the beginning, are like, they're just trying to make it. So it's hard because you have personal alliances and then you have business alliances. And you have to try to see when your business alliances turn deadly. Are you willing to stake your personal alliances on the grounds for money? On the counts for money, on the counts for holdings? Or is it about brotherhood?
Also, it was kind of cool. You said the sentence, there's a lot of grays in New Mexico, and this is not a UFO episode.
See, and honestly, I will bring that up again though later in the future.
It's pretty good. New Mexico, still. The land of enchantment.
Yeah, it is.
What they call it, the land of enchantment.
Hufflepuff.
Now, there are conflicting stories as to what happened next, but according to what Dick Brewer later said, Buck Morton managed to grab McCloskey's pistol, and then Buck Morton used that pistol to shoot his friend before he tried riding off with the other prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And Buck Morton and the other prisoner made it about 400 yards before the regulators cut down both men, shooting Buck Morton 9 times and the other prisoner 5.
Wow.
Then, as Buck Morton lay dying, Billy the Kid got off his horse to watch the light go out of Buck's eyes up close.
You killed my English father.
Wow.
Now watch you turn into shit.
Yes, indeed.
And afterward, Billy couldn't have been happier. He was quoted as saying that he never meant to let them birds reach Lincoln alive. And that statement was the beginning of Billy the Kid's reputation as a cold-blooded killer who never took prisoners.
Damn. All right. He sounds like a really cool character.
Don't take no shit from anybody.
No.
Now, this double killing of two murderers came to be known somewhat dramatically as the Blackwater Massacre. It was no doubt inflated by newspapermen who were in the pocket of James Dolan.
Yeah, I don't think you can't have two. It was just two people
just
shot
two
and
people,
killed.
Yeah.
That ain't a massacre.
Nah.
Not by American standards.
But each one of these chapters of this war get blown up because you have all of these people are also fighting through mass media as well.
Yes, through the print and press.
This would also be the beginning of the end of the regulators' legitimate authority.
It did not last long.
Dang.
No. See, James Dolan began calling in favors from New Mexico Territory Governor Samuel Axtell, who is said to be both dim-witted and pompous.
Yes, you can do whatever you like, Mr. Dolan, and I appreciate that we had this meeting, and actually, I'm not wearing any pants.
That's the perfect impression of a shitty politician.
Well, following Dolan's request, Governor Axtell voided both the deputizations of the regulators and the warrants issued for the men who had assassinated John Tunstall. In other words, the regulators no longer had any official authority.
And so they, respecting authority, they dropped all their guns.
Sure.
Billy Kid actually would go on to become a maid of a house.
Nice. He had
a lovely maid. These two families, it was a father with three kids.
Yeah.
And he got divorced from them. I believe the mother died. And then he got married to another woman. She had three daughters.
She had three daughters.
And they all moved in together. And then he became sort of a fun, sassy maid. And I think that they were all having sex with him.
Isn't that wild? Isn't that crazy?
Losing their lawful status didn't change a goddamn thing. They still had a stack of warrants to serve, and they were going to serve them, come hell or high water. But it seems like this removal of legitimacy pushed some of the regulators, including Billy the Kid, into even more lawless territory.
Oh, yeah, because we don't got to pretend to be cops no more.
They're untethered. Yep. They're free.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the regulators were a military unit who moved as one single organism. These guys split up and reunited again and again, and it was during one of these periods when Billy the Kid was split off from the more level-headed Dick Brewer that Billy made a decision that changed the tenor of the Lincoln County War. Now, it was Billy's opinion that ultimately the man who should pay the price for John Tunstall's death was the man who gave the direct order. Mm-hmm. So Billy and five other regulators went about the business of taking out Sheriff William Brady.
Damn.
Now, we're not sure if Billy and the others were planning to kill Brady on the day they attacked, or if this was a spur-of-the-moment decision. But what we do know is that when the opportunity presented itself, Billy and the others struck.
What I have come to know about Billy the Kid, of the watching the documentaries and reading the two books, it seems to be Billy the Kid was not a necessarily great planner, but he was one of the smartest off-the-cuff criminals at the time.
Sounds like a doer. Maybe not a planner, but a doer.
He's a leader. He was a leader, and he saw opportunities, and he took them whenever he could.
A lot like Leroy Jenkins.
That was actually staged, too. It turned out all of that was reproduced.
Don't ruin stuff for me.
It's really worse out.
Well, on April 1st, 1878, in the middle of the day, Sheriff Brady and four of his deputies were walking past John Tunstall's old store. Unbeknownst to them, six regulators, including Billy the Kid, were in a corral out back, hiding behind an adobe wall.
Mount up.
Yeah. That's actually from Young Guns.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Can't be no geek off the street.
What? I'm not a geek.
Yeah, you gotta know, get clean, gotta know your steel, know what I mean? Earn your keep.
Don't worry. Yeah. At some point, there's going to be a whole geek squad, and we're really going to be cool. We'll be cool geeks, and people are going to call us. And they want us to come over.
Each one systematically shot in the head by Billy the Kid.
That's not right.
Now, these six regulators have been given explicit instructions to not touch Sheriff Brady. Whatever you do, don't fuck with Brady, because if they killed an elected official, all of their credibility would melt away. Mm. But as we know, Billy the Kid never much cared for credibility. And also, he's a 17-year-old kid with a gun and a righteous cause.
Many guns, not just a gun.
That's a lot of guns. Yeah, many, 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 many guns.
He could use that gun rack that Wayne's girlfriend gave him in Wayne's World.
Yeah. So when Brady and his four deputies walked down the street past the corral, the regulators stuck their rifles through the gun ports built into the adobe wall and opened fire.
Hold on a second. They just had holes in the wall so you could put guns in them?
It was their windows. No, it was windows for the adobe. They would build houses out of adobe.
They were specifically gun ports. You know, in case. Yeah.
Okay.
This happened a lot.
You might have, you might have a raid. You might have a Native American tribe coming in and trying to fucking murder all of you because you murdered a lot of them. And so they're now trying to come and murder you.
I feel like if I was there and everyone was drilling holes in the wall to place guns in, I would also say, but then they can put the guns in too. And then we're just going to be sitting in here like
it's difficult to shoot through. Not a lot of people had any accuracy.
Okay.
Yeah. And also this is not that long after, the Texas War for Independence. Like this is a time when, you could conceivably think, a war might break out here any fucking moment. It might have nothing to do with me, but goddamn it, I gotta be ready to defend what's mine.
Kind of, it seems to explain the mentality going forth, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the mentality of everyone trying to fight for a seat on Southwest Airlines.
Yep.
Oh, no. The entire Southwest and Texas in particular are still living their lives by Old West mentalities that do not apply to the modern world. And that's partly why they're so fucked up.
Fantastic.
But that's just me. That's just a native's opinion.
That's it. Okay. That's his opinion.
Yeah. Now, since these boys were aiming specifically for Brady, he was the first to go down. And Deputy George Henman went down with him. The other three deputies, however, fled for cover in nearby houses. Now, Sheriff Brady attempted to rise from the ground after he was wounded multiple times. But before he could get on his feet, the regulators pumped him full of lead.
Woo.
And they ended the life of the man they blamed for the death of their beloved boss with 12 bullets.
Just cut to the other sheriff deputies, one with the little lampshade over his head, standing really still. One guy just on all fours being like, do I look like a table?
There's going to be a lot of that.
But that's not to say this is a clear-cut cinematic moment where the evil villain dies and the hero rides away clean.
Mm-mm.
See, at this point, Deputy Henman was still alive. Mm. And when a saloon owner named Ike Stockton tried pulling him into safety just because it was the right thing to do, Stockton was shot and killed by one of the regulators for helping the enemy.
Oh, you can't kill the barkeep.
Regulators going to regulate, man. When it comes down to the genie's out of the fucking lamp, the dick is out of the pants. These guys are doing whatever it takes now. They're desperados.
All right. Yeah.
The gunplay was so intense that in a crazy coincidence, the justice of the peace who had deputized the regulators in the first place was shot in the ass sideways through both cheeks as he was bent over working in his garden.
That is he Ziggy Stardust? How big was his ass?
I don't know, but he definitely got turned into a periscope. It's weird you could give him a little look finder between his butt cheeks.
You would not believe what happened today, honey.
Look, just blow through this hole. It comes out the other side.
What a crappy day.
But the point here is that just like gang warfare today, innocent people got caught in the crossfire again and again in the Old West, and they especially got caught during the Lincoln County War.
Oh, yeah. This is about to get fucking crazy.
Jeez. Yeah.
But once the gunshots died down, Billy and another regulator walked over to Brady's body so Billy could replace the Winchester rifle that Brady had confiscated during their first encounter. And he did this knowing that three other deputies were still out there. This arrogance was met with more gunfire. And while Billy was lucky to have just been nipped on his side with a flesh wound, the first of five bullet wounds, by the way, that he'd get throughout his short life,
damn,
another regulator was seriously wounded in the thigh. Once the kid and his compatriot limped back to the corral, five out of the six regulators jumped on their horses and rode out of town amidst a hail of bullets, while the wounded regulator, unable to ride, hid underneath the floorboards of John Tunstall's former store until the coast was clear. He was there for like 2 days, bleeding from a major wound on his thigh, but he got away alive.
Damn. It reminds me a little bit of, obviously, Bonnie and Clyde.
It's very similar. People can take bullets during this.
Yes, because I'm remembering all the horrible things that happened to poor Bonnie. And, of course, Clyde as well. I do think if Billy the Kid and Clyde got together, that's a super team.
One day, when we go through the next couple of years, when we've covered many of these people, because we're going to do a lot more gangster coverage, we're going to do a lot more Old West desperado coverage, like all of this stuff, it's so interesting. We'll put together the super team.
Yes.
Yeah. I would actually say Billy the Kid was smarter than Clyde Barrow.
Oh, very much so. Clyde Barrow was not that effective of a criminal. It was way more. But Billy the Kid, though, he became a legend for a reason.
All right. Well,
but also, like, Billy the Kid also found a niche and he stuck to it.
Yeah.
Now, up to this point, the regulators were looked upon favorably by white New Mexicans because everyone knew what it's like to be under the thumb of people like James Dolan. But after they effectively killed a cop in broad daylight in the middle of the street, the white people of New Mexico turned against them. The Mexicans, however, loved the regulators, and they especially loved Billy the Kid more than ever after he was responsible for the murder of an official that they all knew was a piece of shit.
Nice.
They saw Billy specifically as the person who was fighting against their enemies in ways that they couldn't. And therefore, it was often Mexicans who gave Billy and the regulators refuge. But even though the regulators were no longer deputized, and even though six of them had murdered an elected official, they still considered themselves to be deputized.
Hey, man, it's about frame of mind, man.
It really is. They don't even need Tony Robbins CDs.
Perception is reality, man. You got a badge, dude.
Definitely. Yeah.
So Dick Brewer and the regulators continued the process of serving warrants for the murder of John Tunstall.
That's kind of almost like, it's kind of badass, right? It's cool in a way. Shit. I mean, obviously, these guys are all criminals. We're celebrating these guys because they're not serial killers and this happened fucking 200 years ago. But when it comes down to it, like, this is one of those things, the idea of like having that warrant still, and they're like, we still have the charges right here in our hands. Like, there's something about that, just like using it almost like a sigil.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a gray area, you know, because there are two sides here. Like, I guess the regulators, like, you know, you got Dick Brewer on one side that is like, we are still like, damn the fucking law, damn Governor Axel. We're going to do whatever the fuck we need to do to bring justice to this man because that's what's right. And the other side, you got Billy the Kid, who's like, all these fuckers need to die and they need to die at my hands and they all need to die as soon as possible. Who gives a shit how it happens?
Billy the Kid was the chaos agent. But also when it comes down to this whole scenario is, the way the Old West kind of worked, too, was that if they had won the Lincoln County War, like, let's say they did round it all up, eventually enough time would pass where they would be legitimized. You know what I mean? Where, like, we're still in this place where these states are being made. So if they do win this quote-unquote war, they're the ones in charge.
Yeah. Well, next up was alleged Tunstall murder posse member Andrew Buckshot Roberts. Buckshot Roberts had already figured out that deputization or no, the regulators were still coming to kill him. So he sold his ranch and went to a location called Blazer's Mills to wait for a payment to come by mail so he could leave New Mexico forever.
This guy fucked up. Well, he's interesting. This is an interesting, I love this story.
This is my favorite part of the Lincoln County War is the Buckshot Roberts fight. Now there's actually debate as to whether Buckshot Roberts was actually in the posse that killed John Tunstall or whether he just worked for James Dolan and had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, there's one group that says that he was just there. He wasn't there as a part of it, that he was just an employee, and he did the clerk's defense of, like, I'm just working. I'm not supposed to be here today.
Yeah.
Or that he wasn't even there at all. That he wasn't, yeah, some people said, actually, there's three camps. There's some people that say he was just there in the posse and did nothing to stop it, so therefore he's guilty. There's others that say he participated in the shooting, therefore he's guilty. And then there's others that say, like, no, he was just an employee of James Dolan, and somehow the regulators got it in their head that Buckshot Roberts needed to fucking die.
Okay.
But whether or not he was actually involved, it's never a good idea to fuck with a guy who has a gun-themed nickname.
Yeah. Definitely not.
Unless it's nowadays, because most of the time it just means you fart a lot.
Buckshot Zabrowski.
I don't know. In 1877, you definitely don't want to fuck with the guy. He got the name Buckshot because he got shot. He still had a huge load of buckshot in his fucking shoulder. And he was known as like a grumpy loner. He was kind of a, you know, buffalo hunter, a bit of a mountain man, or at least like a lonely type of guy. But he was also just known as Buckshot Morton. You don't fuck with him.
Sounds kind of cool.
It is.
Yeah. And the regulators were about to find out that fact for themselves at great cost.
Uh-oh.
Now, from what I can tell, as it's a little hazy, I think that the confrontation between the regulators and Buckshot Roberts was actually a bit of a coincidence. From what regulators said afterward, Dick Brewer saw Buckshot Roberts approach Brewer's Mills. So Dick sent out a few of his men to convince Buckshot to surrender. But when Buckshot saw that there was a fucking group of heavily armed cowboys waiting for him, he refused to surrender because he knew all about the regulators and he knew that Billy the Kid was riding with him. And he knew Billy the Kid's reputation for shooting and killing anyone who had anything to do with the murder of John Tunstall.
This is like John Wick.
It is. Yeah, it's very similar. But Buckshot Rogers... Buckshot Roberts also, like, it's such a human thing because he was supposed to have already been out of town, but he came back looking for a check that was supposed to show up for him.
Damn.
So that's the whole thing. Like, he was already supposed to be gone, but he was waiting on that freelancer's check. And if you are a freelancer, you know how hard it is to get an invoice fulfilled. And he was waiting on it. And he's like, maybe I'll sneak in and get my shit.
Damn.
No, it was the check for the sale of his ranch. Like, this is his entire fucking livelihood. And it's at this point on the porch of Blazer's Mills that Buckshot Roberts raised his rifle. He and regulator Charlie Beaudry fired at the same time. And while Beaudry's bullet hit Buckshot in the gut, Buckshot's bullet, according to legend, ricocheted off Beaudry's belt buckle and accidentally blew off another regulator's trigger finger.
That's such a fun moment.
God damn it. Now this is the only finger I needed.
I mean, we definitely know it ricocheted off his belt. It's the legend part is that it blew off another regulator's trigger finger. Although we do know another regulator definitely lost his trigger finger in the fight. We just don't know if it was quite as fucking, you know, Three Stooges as it's portrayed here. Mortally gut shot, Roberts then retreated to a nearby adobe house where he dragged a mattress to the doorway for cover. From that vantage point, he hit one regulator in the lung, seriously wounded another in the leg, and even managed to graze Billy the Kid's arm. Gunshot wound number two.
Woo!
And that's when Dick Brewer, leader of the regulators from the beginning, decided that it was his time to shine. He took a position 125 yards away, hoping for a vantage point to take out Buckshot Roberts once and for all. What Dick didn't know, however, was that Buckshot saw him coming. Again, both men fired at the same time once Dick came out from behind cover. But while Brewer's shot totally missed, Buckshot's bullet hit the leader of the regulators directly in the left eye, blowing out the back of his skull.
Whoa!
Yeah, it's sweet.
The presidential death.
Woo. Yeah. So the regulators, figuring that they'd already lost enough, and knowing that Buckshot's gut wound would most likely kill him anyway, they rode off, leaving behind the body of Dick Brewer at Blazer's Mills, where Buckshot Roberts would also die from his gut shot the following day.
If you ever read To Hell on a Fast Horse, the breakdown of this fight is also really cool because, like, Billy the Kid was such a daring motherfucker. Because Buckshot Roberts obviously knew what the hell he was doing. I guess they would go on to call him, they said that he was the bravest man that anybody had ever seen. Like this moment where it's like he just took him, like he took on the regulators alone.
So he has lore around himself as well.
Because of this fight.
Well, the Battle of Blazer's Mill is actually, some people say that this is the only, like when you think of the Wild West, this is the only time the Wild West actually happened.
Yes, where it was like this, where it was people hiding around covered, Billy the Kid running around trying to get angles, and then the other dude, they're all like, it's wild, it's cool, it's actually.
It's interesting.
Now, after the battle at Blazer's Mills, a grand jury indicted four regulators, including Billy the Kid, for the murder of Sheriff Brady. And they indicted six regulators, including Billy, for the murder of Buckshot Roberts. At the same time, though, the scales of justice were beginning to balance, or at least were trying to. See, we're just covering the main battles here. But by this point, well over a dozen men had been killed in gunfights, small and large, as a result of the Lincoln County War.
Because the regulators went full guerrilla style, and they would just go and pick off people, whoever they could get. And Billy, this is where Billy the Kid's body count would rise, where it's just like, we don't know, it's all that thing. We don't know how you attribute who did what to who.
Yes.
But I mean, he was an aggressor. Like, you know that Billy the Kid was an aggressive person. So he would point dude out, being like, that's a guy held the saddle for Downtown Jimmy. And like, they had to go and like kill that guy.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, because Billy the Kid's provable body count is four. Yes. But, you know, in these fucking gun battles, who knows who gets the fucking final shot? Like, who knows?
Yeah. Right.
It's all a mess. It's the same thing. It's just because it happens so fast. Just pop, 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 pop.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Jesse Evans of the Boys and James Dolan were indicted for the murder of John Tunstall. But by this point, neither side really cared. For months, gun battles between the warring factions erupted time and again, and both sides forced settlers to shelter and feed them between fights. Eventually, the guy who replaced Dick Brewer as the leader of the regulators, Frank McNabb, that guy was also killed.
Yep.
And by the time the Lincoln County War was coming to a close, Billy the Kid was in charge.
Yeah, he was the Kiefer Sutherland.
Damn.
The Kiefer Sutherland played Doc Spurlock in Young Guns.
Yes, but I'm talking about the Kiefer Sutherland vehicle in the movies, where I think he was like the department in the TV show, where he was the department
designated
of the Treasury.
Survivor. You're talking about
that guy.
but you can't mix up your Kiefers here, because we got Kiefers in both stories.
I'm talking about Kiefer Sutherland when he was hammered to that hotel and tackled the Christmas tree.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite Kiefer Sutherland.
See, it's an interesting one.
Well, as we said, Billy was involved in every major battle, and he just kept getting better at fighting every single time. In addition, Billy's friends kept getting killed, and the more of his friends that died, the harder Billy would fight. And really, Billy became the leader of the regulators just by virtue of staying alive.
Ugh.
By the time Billy the Kid got to be in charge, though, events were already set in motion that were bringing the Lincoln County War to an end. See, by July of 1878, 5 months after the war started, Alexander McSween, remember the lawyer from the beginning, he was tired of running and tired of fighting. See, he'd gotten word that two puppets of James Dolan, the district attorney and the territorial governor, were being removed from office. So McSween figured now was as good a time as any to return to Lincoln to make a final stand. But as it was, McSween jumped the gun. Because his enemy, James Dolan, still had friends in high places. And that indictment that James Dolan had for the murder of John Tunstall, symbolic at best.
Mm.
Now, Alexander McSween, who, remember, was a friend of John Tunstall and had been participating in the war as an advisor from the beginning, he arrived in the town of Lincoln with 60 regulators, including Billy the Kid. On Dolan's side, there were 40 members of his faction already in Lincoln.
Because it was also at nighttime, right? They rolled in. They rolled in and nobody was there yet. So they all shit and took their positions and shit.
Damn.
It wasn't until the morning. Like, they were like, this is it. This is the last big one.
See people closing the doors.
Yeah, like, look, this is like, it is. This is what the movies are all based on.
Get inside.
Yeah. So both factions settled into buildings that were friendly towards their side. And so began the five-day battle that would end the Lincoln County War for good. It's not like in the movies where it's just like, you know, a bunch of people firing at one house. I mean, this is fucking guerrilla. It's urban warfare in the Old West.
Because the goal was, in their minds, they're like, we'll take it, this town, house by house by house. Like, what we'll do is we'll just kill and move, find out who our allies are as we're going and build up. And so that eventually, like literally, we will just occupy enough homes in this town where we will be in charge.
Just cut to the one guy being like, I just moved out here so I could have a bakery. This is different than I expected it to be. I was going to actually specialize in croissant because I didn't think there was enough croissant around.
Yes, it was a dearth of croissants, but now apparently I am a corpse.
Actually, there is going to be one of those guys. It's so fucking sad. Now, for the first 4 days, the two warring factions exchange sporadic gunfire from their fortifications, and they only manage to hit men on the opposing sides a couple of times. These are amateur armies. These aren't guys with training, not really. In other words, it was somewhat of a stalemate, but Dolan's men knew they were outnumbered, so it was only a matter of time before the regulators figured out a way to overtake them. So James Dolan contacted an army colonel he knew of named Nathan Goldlace Dudley, so named because he was overly fond of accessorizing his uniforms.
Yeah, he's calling in the fucking army. He's like, we're going to have the
army.
He's
calling
in
the fashion police.
It is. They do look like the fashion police when they show up. And the pictures of Goldlace are really, really funny because he does look, he looks like Louis the 14th. It is really weird. Like,
soldiers don't get enough respect for love and flair.
Some of them do.
Texans as well. Yeah, and New Mexicans. There's a lot of flair.
It is interesting because it's such a, I just love the fucking, the personalities really shine through during this time period. Like, it is weird. There's a lot of individuality.
Absolutely.
You see, like,
well, that's one of the good things about America.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But getting the army out to Lincoln wasn't an easy sell. So you remember, this is the end of post-Civil War Reconstruction in America, and Congress had just passed the Posse Comitatus Act. Ben, would you like to tell me what the Posse Comitatus Act is?
Yeah, if you see a posse, you got to jerk it off. I'm assuming it is something to do with not recognizing posses as legal and probably deputizing or creating more of a federal government, like an FBI type situation, but I don't really know.
It was actually used cited quite a bit last summer. It prevents the use of soldiers for law enforcement purposes.
Interesting.
Well, that didn't work out.
No. Yeah, and you still got to jerk those guys off.
Yeah, 1033
program. Be careful. If a militia just shows up, honestly, it'd be better to try to pleasure them until a lull of excitement. And they just like get one guy out there who's willing to suck as many dicks as possible. Whoever wants to suck as many dicks as possible.
Sure.
Get him in there, calm them, kill them in their sleep.
Isn't that something? Well, very
interesting.
That was
interesting. Fun. Yeah, they got
today, Marcus.
Oh, of course. But no, they of course got around that by militarizing the police instead.
Yeah. Very easy.
Oh, yeah. The police, a new military, a new occupying force.
Yeah, it's like we have five armies all at once. Around us.
It is one of the worst things that has ever happened to the country.
Yeah. We just now covered one of the worst things about our country. Uh-huh.
Isn't that nice?
Well, Goldlace Dudley found a loophole in the Posse Comitatus Act, and he agreed to come to Lincoln under the idea, we're here only here to protect the women and children. We're not here to participate. We're just here to make sure the women and children are safe, and if we should maybe do a couple of things in the pursuit of protecting those women and children, then so be it.
Especially when we bring heavy artillery.
Yeah. To protect the women and children, Dudley arrived with 4 officers, 11 mounted buffalo soldiers, 24 infantrymen, a 12-pound howitzer, and a fucking Gatling gun.
Yeah, dude.
Good Lord.
And the regulators, it's really from the inside of these adobe huts where they've been now for days, right? They're in there, like, it's a hard time. They have supply lines running it out, but they're getting kind of haggard. And then the scene of them watching these soldiers march through because the...
Are they on buffalo back? Are they riding buffaloes?
No, buffalo soldiers. It's black soldiers.
Buffalo soldier
is a term for black army soldiers, like specifically cavalrymen. They were just known to be like the badasses of the badasses.
They're like special ops.
I have learned
Special ops. Yeah.
Look at that.
But they would buffalo come in.
Soldier. That's where buffalo soldier, you know.
No, I got it. I didn't expect you to do that.
I actually like that, though. Thank you for the rendition. Because they were from Goldlace, they were all duded up. So they're watching this fancy-ass army roll into town with a Gatling gun behind them. And they're all just like, well, things have changed.
It's like a boss battle, man.
Yeah. I mean, the Gatling gun wasn't used in the Civil War quite as often as the movies portray, but Gatling gun still had a fearsome reputation especially if you were a former Confederate soldier. Gatling gun was a Union weapon. I mean, basically, this is an early machine gun. This thing is capable of firing 3,000 rounds per minute. Woo-hoo. And the Army had brought 2,000 rounds.
Yeah.
So So when the Army showed up with a Gatling gun in tow and aimed it toward the main Regulator stronghold, 40 of the 60 Regulators fled.
Yeah.
Jesus. Immediately. They hid themselves under blankets and just ran away.
And why do I think that most Old West historians would marry a Gatling gun before a woman?
And of course, this left only the most loyal people, and that included Billy the Kid. Now, Alexander McSween stayed behind too, because the main stronghold was his home, and this was McSween's fight from start to finish.
Yeah, it's a good thing that Billy didn't see any turkeys out the window. He would have been out of there.
His wife, Susan. Alexander McSween's wife, Susan, even tried going out and talking some sense into gold lace, but there wasn't anything she could say to make him back off. He refused to talk to her because she was a woman. Mm-hmm. Every time she tried saying something to him, he'd say, "I don't know what a woman would be doing talking to me in this situation, but I believe you should probably even go back to a kitchen."
Send a boy.
Yes, he's so much of a man. He's so straight and manly.
Oh, yeah.
He can't even talk to a woman.
No, I only talk to other big men.
Yes.
In the shower.
I'm so straight.
All business is done in the bath.
Well, Susan McSween returned in failure, and soon after, Dolan's men went on the offensive. They lit McSween's house on fire using coal oil as an accelerant. And the Regulators, they managed to put out the flames a few times, but it finally got to be too much to handle.
Yeah.
Finally, the house caught fire for good, and the remaining Regulators were forced to move from room to room in the McSween house to escape the flames. And while the women and children were finally let go, McSween, the Kid, and less than a dozen Regulators were left to burn or surrender.
And
Jesus.
There was like a moment, there's a very cinematic moment too, because the Gatling gun had to be like moved around. And like the idea of like action movie set pieces, where this idea of like, because Billy the Kid is watching this Gatling gun get repositioned again and again, and he's just like, "Oh, they now are, now I'm, they're coming for me. Now I'm going to get the
now
Gatling gun.
Now they're aiming at me. Oh, no."
Now, McSween at this point had lost all nerve. I mean, his entire life is going up in flames.
Right.
His wife and kids are gone. He doesn't know where the fuck they are. Like, it said that he just sat there and said, "Billy, I have lost my mind." And so, as fucking McSween panicked, Billy the Kid, 18 years old at most, took charge and came up with an escape plan. Two groups would leave under the cover of night, with Billy leading the first and McSween following with the second. The first group also included a law clerk named Harvey Morris, who had moved to New Mexico for his health and had gotten caught up in the war through simple bad luck.
And Harvey Morris is actually the great-great-great-grandfather of Slow Talking Morris.
Yes, the Holden McNeely, fantastic character that he does.
Just wanted to bake some bread.
All right, very good. Absolutely fantastic. Did the doctor recommend Harvey go where there's more dust? Why on earth would anyone go to New Mexico for their health?
The clean mountain air.
Tuberculosis, man.
Yeah, you get dry.
It's that dry mountain air.
TB?
And really, the dust didn't get too bad until the Dust Bowl, which was, that would be 1877, 60 years after this.
Okay.
Yeah, and now you can get a Dust Bowl in West Hollywood. It's actually keto.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Having fun.
Well, ironically, when Billy's group burst out of the burning house, Harvey Morris, the man who moved out west for his health, was the only one shot and killed.
It's kind of like, yeah, dude, I know.
Will I go to heaven?
Maybe don't talk. Just die, Harvey. Just want you to just die.
Well, the rest of the people in the first group, including Billy, they returned fire, fled into the darkness, and escaped both the Army and Dolan's men.
Ooh. Which is, it was hard, man. They were on the heels of Gatling gunfire. Like, they ran. He said it was a daring escape.
Yeah.
But sounds like it.
But the second group, which included McSween, they waited too long to make their move.
Uh-oh.
And they were forced to take cover in the yard. At that point, a deputy named Robert Beckwith stepped forward and told the remaining regulators that he was prepared to receive their surrender. And instead, somebody, we don't know who, shot him in the fucking eye.
Yeah.
Well, that is gonna hurt our chances of survival.
Oh, yeah.
And after Beckwith was killed, the army and Dolan's men, fucking everyone, opened fire. And Alexander McSween was gunned down as the physical representation of his dreams went up in flames behind him. He was the 25th and last fatality in the five-month-long Lincoln County War. But for Billy the Kid, while the Lincoln County War was over, so too was any hope he might have had for a normal life. Remember, he's indicted for two murders at this point, Brady and Buckshot Roberts. But on the other hand, seems like Billy the Kid didn't want a normal life anymore.
No, man, this was the origin story he was begging for. He wanted this. This is why I really do think now we'll see Billy, the true Billy the Kid.
I don't want your life. I had to do it.
Yeah.
He did, though.
He did. He did want that life. But I think really, like, Billy the Kid's, but what he does next tells you everything about how Billy the Kid wanted to be perceived. While the other regulators who escaped, they lit out for pastures where they didn't have to fucking worry about murder warrants. But Billy the Kid, he stayed in New Mexico for the rest of his short life. His role in the Lincoln County War had propelled him to celebrity status. And over the next couple of years, he would become the outlaw's outlaw. Ooh. By the time of his death, Billy the Kid would be an American legend. And that's where we'll pick back up for the conclusion to our series on Billy the Kid.
Damn, truly, I can't think of a series that has been more informative.
Yeah, I remember.
The information is absolutely fantastic in this, though. Very interesting.
It's real thick, but and
informative.
Informative.
Yeah, I talk for a living. Yeah. Informative.
If you want to read more about the Lincoln County War, specifically in more detail, and also in wonderful comic book form, the story of the Lincoln County War by Rick Geary is fucking great. Those of you who love like the big book series out there, Rick Geary did something in like every single one of them. He's fucking fantastic. I met the guy at Comic-Con a couple of years ago and bought it directly from him. And I talked to him about his research process. Dude lives in New Mexico.
Awesome.
And it's a no like, one very, ever very well researched.
Anything, young man.
It must have been nice to see Marcus's smile.
He was kind of surprised to get the questions he was getting at New York Comic Con were not the kinds that he was expecting that Saturday.
But seriously, next episode, we're really getting into the actual, even though we've done two episodes, this is
crazy.
Next is like the real meat of the Billy the Kid story and what we'd all come to know about Billy the Kid. Pat Garrett, we're going to run into him. It's a fascinating part of history. Yeah. I want to thank everybody who have shown us fucking awesome support for our historical summers. We have this theme summer. We've been doing history all summer. It's really fun. Yeah, we got one more historical series that we're going to do after this, and then we're getting right back into fucking Moida.
Yeah, I got the seance last night for our Patreon members and our Discord server, and like everyone was so insanely sweet about how much they've been loving the history stuff. So
awesome.
Thank everybody very much for all your kind words on that. We've been having a fucking blast with it.
We absolutely love this shit. You got me, man. You poisoned me. You history poisoned me.
Yeah, man. That's been my whole fucking goal this whole time is to trick people into learning history.
Woohoo! Oh, don't expose it.
But we got weirdo topics coming up too in the mix. There's little palate cleansers and all this kind of stuff. We're really excited for what we got coming up. We got live shows in Detroit, Columbus, and Cincinnati.
That's right.
Check that fucking bullshit out. Come on out and see us dance and strut and fret.
Absolutely. Get those tickets. Also, thanks to everyone who came out in Milwaukee, Des Moines, Omaha, and Minneapolis. That was just such a fantastic group, and we're really enjoying it. It is unfortunate we can't hug and touch because of the predicament, the pickle we're all currently in. But the questions that have been asked at the Q&A have been so wonderful.
It's really cool.
And everyone is so sweet. And so I just want to thank. We want to thank everyone for being so thoughtful. And for the audiences, they could not have been better.
People
are super excited to see you all. as we continue on the road this year.
People have really been responsible and cool, and we're just doing our thing, man. I'm so glad that we could still live a semblance of normal life during this time period, while it is difficult to do. Absolutely. I also want to say, don't sleep on No Dogs and Spun, Someplace Underneath. There are some shows like right now, because Someplace Underneath is doing an incredible series right now about human trafficking in Ohio. And they've been doing really, honestly, some incredible work on that series. Like, so go check it out. They're really hustling. But listen to all the other fucking shows we're going to
have. Absolutely. Yeah. Check everything out here on the Last Podcast Network. You know your favorite shows. Keep on supporting them. And of course, we have some big news coming up here near future. So, all right, everyone. Well, thank you.
Don't forget to go to your local comic book store and request Soul Plumber issue 1. The cutoff day for that is coming up fairly soon. So go ask them now.
Incredible. I can't
ask your local comic. Yes, and if you live too far away from a comic book store, that's okay, but you can read it digitally. But if you can go to your local comic book store and support your local comic book store, go and get to know your local comic book guy or gal. There's a lot of there's a lot of really, really fucking awesome books going out right now, like Department of Truth and Ice Cream Man and Immortal Hulk. So go check out some shit at your local comic book store.
Yes, I'm so endlessly impressed with everything as far as that comic book. You guys are going to love it, I promise you. All right, everyone. Hope everyone is healthy and happy out there. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gene.
Magustalations.
And me. And I tell you what, I'd certainly be quite the desperado.
You'd be like, you'd be known as Peach Fuzz Zabrowski if you were in the West.
Oh, human vagina.
Human vagina. Human vagina, Henry Zabrowski. You are. It's a good thing we're ending the episode.
I was in Poland. My family was in Poland at the time.
Nah, I got a good old West nickname for you. Pork Butt.
Because you know why? You have to treat the meat specially.
You tenderize the meat. Yeah, my nickname is Tenderizer.
Oh, no.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Save big money on everything for your projects. Now at Menards. We have it all for garden and landscaping essentials. Visit our outdoor garden center today and update your backyard space. Grid accents lattice panels have a timeless design with an innovative design that's simple to install and requires almost no maintenance. Save big on lattice panel options at Menards. View our entire selection of garden center products today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.